The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of OneClick Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io, the ERP built natively for e-commerce sellers. ERPs are terrifying to set up. They're expensive, they're painful, and for good reason. A lot of the leading companies make you work with expensive outside consulting firms, pay to add new channels, new carriers, new warehouses. Thankfully, none of that is an issue with Fulfill. With Fulfill, all of their onboarding is done in-house with their team that knows the product inside and out. You don't have to pay to add new channels, carriers, or warehouses. There's no expensive middleware software you have to buy because they have built it all in-house. Native connections to Shopify, Amazon, Walmart, eBay, Etsy, WooCommerce, Magento, and more. And they are the highest rated ERP in the ECF community among our members. And that is when they're getting stacked up against the likes of Odoo, Scubana, Brightpearl, and yes, even NetSuite. So if you want to learn more about streamlining your e-commerce business without all the pain and gnashing of teeth, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, this might be geared a little bit more towards those larger 7- and 8-figure brands, the topic we're talking about. We're going to be doing a geek out on ERPs, but not just why you need one or how they're helpful or Fulfill.io in particular, which is what we're going to be talking about because the CEO and co-founder, Sharoon Thomas, or ST as he goes by, is joining me to talk about this today. Kind of diving in, I think the story of anyone who's built something interesting and meaningful and complex is very cool. So we're going to be getting into the story about something. How do you build something as complex as a software tool like an ERP? The lessons he's learned building that company, and just a lot of stuff. So I'm looking forward to this. It goes without saying. You just heard the promo at the top. Fulfill is a sponsor of the podcast. They have been a sponsor of our event for years, but got the opportunity to talk with ST and wanted to take that because he's built something pretty cool and has a lot of knowledge in the space. So ST, welcome. Good to have you on. Thanks for being here. And it's kind of crazy. As you mentioned, our companies have kind of worked together for years. We've actually never met until about 10 minutes ago, which is pretty wild. Yeah. So good to have you.
Thank you for having me, Andrew, and super excited to geek out on ERPs with you.
Yeah, geek out on our ERPs. We lost probably 75% of people, but the 25% of people that stuck They are hardcore. They are with it till the end, and so glad that
this is probably the most boring topic that you'd want to talk about on a podcast. But hey, I'm hoping there are some people out there who's gonna geek out like us on this.
Now, here's the thing: like, it's boring for some people, but the people it's not boring for, when you have something that can transform your business and efficiency and automation is not boring when it's your business, right? Like if you're talking about a meatpacking factory in Des Moines and you've never been there, it's super boring. Well, even then I would say it's not boring. Even then I think that's fascinating. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, myself included, really, truly, deeply appreciate automation. Like we did when we were in Charlotte for our regional event this last year, we went to a FedEx facility and saw how all of the automation worked. It was this huge, I don't know, 150,000 square foot. Anyway, point being, automation, I think, in any form is cool. So don't sell yourself short here on the interest level. But I want to start with talking about building an ERP. I've talked to people in the software space, and I feel like I was around hanging out with a group one time, and somebody was talking about building a software company, and one person mentioned like, oh, hey, you could build an ERP, and then the table went quiet. And then everyone started laughing hysterically because they said that would be the absolute most complex, craziest thing you could do, right? Like the maniacal laughter. So begs the question out of the gates, like you founded this company or co-founded it, I believe. And like, why build an ERP with how complex they are, how many integrations there are, what a heavy lift that is? Why take on that challenge?
Yeah, I can really resonate with that dinner story. Early days, I remember a VC that I was speaking to who pretty much told me that the first rule of building an ERP is not to build one. So totally get where you're coming from. Yeah, it's a complex product. It takes years to build, if not decades. But this is what me and my co-founders, we have done for the last, about 14 years. So even prior to Fulfill, we have been ERP consultants and implementing systems for all kinds of businesses, what we have done almost all of our career. So that's one of those most boring things out there, but that's something that gets us really excited. Even today, if you put us co-founders in a room, I think we'll go back to talking about invoices and shipping and fulfillment and automation. So it's just the thing that we really enjoy doing. And that's how we ended up deciding to build an ERP system. And our experience in the space was where we saw most challenges was in e-com and D2C. So that ended up being the niche that we focused on. Yeah, that's pretty much how we ended up building an ERP system of all things.
What about, are you able to see Amazon trends at all? Do you have any thoughts on if more or less people are going to Amazon? I mean, the wholesale thing is interesting because as kind of follows the narrative of as traffic's gotten harder, it's going to, you know, seeking out existing distribution, even at the expense of a little bit of margin, has become more popular. I think you could say the same thing with Amazon too. Kind of shifted my thoughts on this a little bit recently, but have you seen the same thing? Have you seen more and more people going to Amazon over the last year-ish?
I don't think I have specific data on Amazon as a channel for our customers. General trending numbers have been higher for Amazon as a channel, but that could also be influenced by new merchants that have come on board.
Anything else that's worth noticing on the kind of the macro landscape or even looking forward, things that you're hearing merchants worry about or trying to plan for, or yeah, trends that maybe you're seeing just the first early signs of that are concerning or encouraging?
Yeah, I think there's quite a bit of concern and everyone's closely watching what's happening. Planning has been incredibly hard for this year. I think probably a good summary for this year, I'm going to quote one of our customers who said, a flat year would be a good year. So I think that's just a general sentiment on what everyone's hoping for.
The e-commerce trends report that we released about 6 months ago, one of the things that stood out to me when I did a correlation on what brands are doing the best was things that you would guess, like return on ad spend, actually surprisingly didn't drive outcomes very much, if at all, actually almost not at all. But the things that really drove growth and especially profitability were things like companies that focused, overemphasized brand and storytelling, companies that had lean operations. The headcount per revenue was about half that of what some of the other brands that weren't doing as well were. A lot of times companies that used a 3PL versus their own warehouse were much more profitable and kind of just healthier in general. And so some of those operational metrics over the advertising metrics and their focus on their approach, does that kind of sync up with what you see with your amazing x-ray vision into the revenue and analytics and finances of all these companies? Or does that pencil with kind of what you see or not so much?
Yeah, 100%. I think lean operations is a huge factor. And if we dive into that for a second, for a company at scale, say 8 or 9 figures in revenue, operating in a lean fashion usually means not having to throw more people at the problems that they have. So for each channel they launch, they shouldn't be adding more people. They should be able to operate more diverse channels. It could be different brands. It could be a different marketplace. It could be a different way of selling, like a brick and mortar. It shouldn't require more people to do that. So that's when you start seeing efficiencies, when you have the same set of tools, people, and processes, and you're now able to tap into more channels and increase the revenue across the board. So yeah, I'm in complete agreement that lean operations is a huge factor when it comes to being able to scale companies well, especially in this climate.
And how, you know, so started 2000, you've been doing this 8 years. Is this the type of business where, I'm guessing venture-backed, how long does it take to build up to get to a point of profitability or even approaching profitability? Because again, there's such massive investments you have to make in a product like this, even to get to the point where you can offer it to your first customer. So like, what does that runway look like in terms of number of capital raises you need to do when you think about like hoping to hit profitability? That's a big question there, but how do you think about the, how much to invest up front to until you get to hit sustainability, given the massive overhead to build?
Very interesting question. So this is one of those things that we decided to take a very different approach on. We have raised very little capital. We are profitable and of course cash flow positive. And that's been the intention from day one. So we have always charged for the product. We have always charged for the implementation services. And having come from the background of selling and implementing ERP systems prior to Fulfill, that came quite naturally to us. That meant building a product a lot slower than we liked, but that helped us build a business that can sustain itself and build for the customer instead of scaling a business that we didn't want to. One of the most common problems that we have seen in this space is that the venture returns that are expected requires companies to accelerate really fast. And when you build something like a, even if your aim is to build something like an ERP system, we often end up seeing these companies that have scaled up as just pure order management systems or pure inventory management systems. And at some point, they cap out and they don't add enough value to customers and they have to then move on and find a different solution. We didn't want our customers to go through that. So our customers today, like I said, it's a big range from 7-figure merchants to 9-figure merchants. And we are able to service that because of this mindset that we have taken on how to scale the company.
The downside, of course, you can't go as fast. You can't hire. You have to be a lot more careful with your engineers. And you touched on it a little bit, but what are some of the advantages that you've seen from bootstrapping an ERP? Because that really surprises me. You raised a little bit. And when you say you raised a little bit, however you're comfortable, can you share a sense like, you know, what percentage of your company is owned by investors or dollar amounts or however you feel comfortable? What is a little bit?
We raised a very small $1 million round, mostly from people who are very familiar with the space, who valued what we were doing and were firsthand familiar with this problem, and they just wanted this problem solved. They agreed very much with the vision we had on how we wanted to solve it. So that's pretty much the capital that we have raised.
Yeah, that is very little for building something like this. And we're sitting here 2023, we've kind of come off a bit of a binge on VC fundraising, valuations, all that kind of stuff. That's got to feel pretty, I mean, was it hard though for you? Like, because I remember times when I'd see people raise at a $20 million valuation, they'd give up 10% of their company on an idea and they'd get a $2 million check, right? And like you own 90% of this business that you now have $2 million in cash to go. And it just, to me, I was like, this is very tempting. This is crazy. How hard was it for you? Because I'm sure you had people knocking in the boom days, even just a year ago, offering to invest at nice checks and stuff. Like, how did you think about either taking or not taking those? Because at that point, you'd built, you know, something viable. How did you think about that then when the valuation was so rich?
Yeah, even last year when the boom times, it was quite common for investors to reach out, unsolicited term sheets and pushing. So at that point of time, staying disciplined was super important to make sure that, you know, we don't fall into the same traps that are there. I think it's just really important to understand if the path that you're taking to build a company aligns with your customer. So in this case, for us, our merchants, what we saw with each of these intros that come in from our investors or term sheets that come in, it never really felt like that aligned with how we wanted to build the company for our merchants. And that's when we would have we'd take a step back and say, hey, this is not a good fit for us. This wouldn't align what we want to do with what the investors want. And I think that's probably the source of most of these problems that you usually see with SaaS companies as well. Now, if this was a completely different space, the product is not a decade-long play like ERP. Yeah, 100% scaling, taking capital and scaling as fast as you can and dominate the space is totally the play to go. But for something like an ERP system, I don't believe that's the right path to take. But that's my personal opinion.
Yeah. Can you think of a time, I'm sure you can, is there a time you'd be willing to share, especially in the early days, or maybe in between when that $1 million potentially was running out. Maybe it didn't. Maybe you got the profitability before you spent it. But what is one of the more poignant or memorable moments when you're like, oh man, it'd be so nice to have like just a big chunk, a big wad in the bank right now. It would make this problem so much easier. Any anecdote that you can share with us from that journey?
I don't remember thinking, oh, I wish I had this extra capital to spend. But there were times in the early days where I certainly remember thinking that, oh, I wish we could spend and build a brand around this and build credibility so we can bring this merchant on board or this customer on board. So we look like a... we could attract the specific customer. Those are things that I've definitely thought about at points in time, and capital is one way to solve that and build brand recognition. And even today, I think some of our, if we are not well known, it's because we don't spend a lot of money on marketing and everything goes into building the product and reinvesting to make our customers successful. So that's certainly one thing that I've definitely seen as a consequence of not raising a lot of capital.
Yeah. I mean, you were telling me before that really the only marketing you either have done this year, I don't know about ever, but at least this year is ECF, e-commerce fuel on the podcast and our events, which A, thank you, but B, that really surprised me. So is it most of your growth, do you see most of it come from word of mouth? Is kind of the idea, like we use a little strategic advertising with, you know, communities like this that have a high, you know, high hit rate in terms of how applicable it is to the audience. And then the rest, we're just going to hopefully bank on word of mouth and people sharing it.
Yeah, I think e-commerce in general is a very close-knit community. Everyone's happy to help each other. So I'd say a good chunk of our customers have come in from word of mouth. E-commerce Fuel is a big place for that. Good parts and bad parts. Like when customers come in, they sometimes already know the pricing on their friend's card. So it makes my sales colleagues' job hard. But yeah, end of the day, it's word of mouth. And, you know, merchants are happy to talk to other merchants about what helps them scale and so on. So good parts and bad parts, but word of mouth has been the way we have scaled so far.
Before we start getting into just e-commerce stuff specifically, last question I want to ask you. I mean, ERP and software in general is very complex, especially software that is integrated or integrates with a lot of different things. Connectors are always breaking. You've got technical debt. There's just a lot going on. So how do you think about, like, as you're building something, not only that, but you have all these different stores with different use cases and good ERPs are kind of customizable. I think you guys have an API as well that can help with that. So a lot of power, but also like anyone doing this, there'd be issues, things break, fires put out, unhappy customers. Like one of the more complex businesses and business models I can think of. So what kind of frameworks do you have? Like you're, you know, obviously the CEO and the leader. How do you think about trying to build despite the temptation to just always be putting out little fires? Like how do you think about priorities? How do you think about managing all those little details? And how do you manage such a complex business on an ongoing basis? That's a huge question, but do you have any like philosophies or frameworks that you try to build your team and help that your team really thinks about strongly to deal with that? Because it's a massive issue.
Yeah, I think that's a complex question too. So I'm probably going to take a stab at answering each of those parts. Now, Metaverse, we have like pretty strong opinions on how to build the product and the ERP itself. So everything in Fulfill is strongly opinionated, but those opinions are formed from spending a lot of time with our customers. It's not uncommon for Fulfillians, including me, to spend time in warehouses, spend time with accountants to figure out how the process is going on and so on. And that also means that everyone at Fulfill owns product. So that's one of the ways that we have figured out how to scale learning and managing a vast product that touches different areas. So if a customer today opens up a support ticket, it's very likely that that support response is coming from someone who owns that area of the product. So they're not just getting templated answers. They are getting answers. They are able to solve problems. And if something needs to change, people are empowered to make those changes in the product. So that helps us scale product knowledge across Fulfill. We have also had to take different approaches from traditional software companies. For example, this is something that surprises a lot of people. We don't have a product roadmap. We have a strong product vision, but we don't have a roadmap. In every major ERP system that I've worked with and every time I've interacted with a product manager, I've always felt like a product roadmap is their biggest excuse to stop listening to their customers. And when you're building for something like e-commerce, which moves really fast, like what was happening last year is not what's happening this year. Even from a quarter to quarter, it changes so fast. It's really not possible to build a product with a roadmap that's a year old. So I think one of my favorite examples for this is what happened during COVID. Shopify launched buy online, pickup in store, or curbside pickup. We rolled out support for it a week after. So if you have to be, if you have to react that fast to how things change, we cannot build a product in the traditional way. This also introduces issues like, you know, things break sometimes. We have a 2-week release cycle. We ship really fast. So there are side effects of it. But end of the day, something that evolves as fast adds more value to our merchants than staying stagnant.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. And you obviously love e-commerce. You're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-Commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log onto our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active form with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana, or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members. You know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and just, and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member-only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you make, helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools, their agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion.
All right, I'll stop geeking out on the business operations side and get into some e-commerce stuff here, which is probably as applicable, if not more applicable to everyone else. You have this fascinating view on aggregate data across all your merchants. And of course, you know, you keep it confidential and private, but you get to see at a very 30,000 foot level. But my, I had a family member once who worked at a bank, and I always thought it was such an interesting position. I think she was a teller for a while. And she just, it's like she had X-ray vision. You know, she, I may have mentioned this before on the podcast, but people would roll up through the drive-thru in old beaten down trucks, and they'd have millions in cash sitting in their checking account. And then people would roll in, you know, in a you know, BMW $150,000 car, and they'd be overdrawn by like $4,000, right? So, which I thought was just this fascinating way of looking at the world that most people don't get to see. And you have that in e-commerce, given that ERP touches almost all sensitive and important data. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you've seen over the last 6 months at a high level in terms of macro trends. Because sometimes it's easy to, you know, hop on Twitter and you pull things, or even looking at some of the polls we have in e-commerce fuel, but you have about as close to a source of real truth as it gets. So I'd love to hear what you're seeing at a high level.
Yeah. So cannot share specific data, but of course happy to talk about general trends in this, especially going into Q4 last year. We were all quite concerned too about things are going to turn out. Q4 was surprisingly good. And for most merchants, it was Black Friday, Cyber Monday was good. There were many merchants, in fact, even that outperformed their own expectations. This quarter has been, we are starting to see consumer spending trending downwards. And a good chunk of our customers are D2C, so we are starting to see that slow down a little bit. We are also starting to see a lot more inventory in the books of our customers. So in aggregate, I think everyone's holding a lot more inventory than they used to. We are also starting to see trend changes in how businesses are operating. For example, we are starting to see a lot more wholesale and selling to big box retail. I don't know if it's because most of our customers are 8-figure, 9-figure merchants, that selling at that scale usually requires diversifying into different channels. But we are starting to see a big push into, you know, having EDI and have a lot more of these trading partners, Nordstrom and Macy's and all of them, come on board and sell through that as well. Now, that usually means your revenue numbers may stay consistent, but it's a lower gross margins to begin with. So a mixed bag across the board. That's just a high level gist of what we have seen over the last few months.
Yeah, that's fascinating and helpful. Let's talk ERP a little bit. So why, you know, how does a business know when it's time to invest in an ERP? And I think most people, if you've made it this far, I'm guessing you probably know what an ERP is. But if for the, you know, couple, you know, one or two people maybe that haven't, ERP is a system, enterprise resource planning, I believe is the acronym. And it's this kind of central brain that maybe before, when you had the, you know, inventory planning software and accounting software and warehouse management software and order routing and all these connectors and, you know, let's say half a dozen different tools, it really aims to consolidate all or as many as possible into one system that talks with it, everything is native. And so it's harder to do, but if it's also more powerful, easier to automate and streamline your business, everything from placing POs to, you know, managing stock to doing your accounting to all that kind of stuff, to managing, you know, orders from different channels. So all that being said, like how does a business know when it's time to invest in an ERP? Because we'll talk about in a minute. Like it's a big lift to implement even a great ERP in terms of time investment. So when, and a lot of times, you know, you probably don't want to do that too early. So when does it make sense to actually take the painful medicine, at least on the implementation front, to go through an ERP? Where have you seen that? Because you've done a lot of implementations with Fulfill and also before.
Yeah. So that's a very good question. And first off, not every business needs an ERP. And it's definitely possible to be too early to get an ERP system. So yes, it's really, really important to understand when you should get it. Often a number that gets thrown around is a revenue number. Oh, at this stage you need it. Or when you get to 7 figures, 8 figures, you need it. But it just varies a lot from business to business. And for founders out there, I think one good way to think about this is, you know, early days, you have problems and you have gaps between each team and department, and it's completely okay to have hacks in there and so on. But as you scale, you slowly start seeing that, you know, throwing humans as duct tape is not working well, and a significant amount of energy is going there. A lot of the customer experience problems are coming from systems not talking to each other. That's usually a good indicator that you probably need an ERP system. With Fulfill, for example, most people who come to us are not actually coming to buy an ERP system. And in fact, they don't want to buy an ERP system because of this idea that, hey, this is complex, it's going to be huge, we don't want all of this lift. But they're coming in to solve like specific problems. Hey, we have a problem with inventory management, or we are not able to close our books at the end of the month, and it takes us 2 weeks to even get everything together. Or we have these operational issues in the warehouse and our operations is complex. So these are all common indicators that an ERP may be the solution for you. But there's nothing like, you know, if X, Y, and Z, then you need an ERP system. It just changes from business to business. In many ways, it's just a solution waiting for a problem.
Got it. And I'd love to talk specifically Fulfill. There's a lot of ERPs out there with varying degrees of capability, some 100% comprehensive, some, you know, maybe 50%-ish or even less. What is Fulfill? What are you guys best at, and what are you not great at for people, you know, who just to, you know, candidly say, hey, we're not a good fit for these types of businesses? We'll start with the best at. What's Fulfill really good at?
Yeah, so we are a very focused ERP system that only caters to one type of customer. You must be brand. D2C is a big part of your operation, wholesale, you're selling on Amazon, Walmart, or marketplaces like that. You're selling wholesale, you're managing inventory either in your own warehouse or through a 3PL. we are focused just on that type of customer. So we are not a generic ERP system like, you know, like most systems out there. We're just very, very focused on this. This means you get a bunch of things out of the box, integrations with most platforms you would use like Shopify or Magento or Amazon and so on. So that makes sure that it doesn't take you 6 months to implement an ERP system. All of these things work out of the box with the system. So you're focusing and spending a lot of that time during implementation, taking something like Fulfill and customizing it to fit your business and your custom flows instead of spending time integrating with all of the other systems that you use.
Got it. And what are you guys not great at? And maybe also a sub question for that. Like, what is the biggest complaint you get from customers that you have that they're, you know, if people in ECF were like, oh, hey, this is, you know, when we talk to ST, great guy, but here's our number one gripe we wish they would fix about the product or add.
You know, if you were to go by the conversation we had before this, before we started this podcast, I'd say our, what are we not great at is probably marketing. So that also means customers don't know us and what we do. But on a serious note, I think the biggest gap that someone who comes off a demo talks about usually is, hey, you guys don't do any listing management. We don't push products into different channels that we sell in. So we still need a different solution for that, for managing product attributes and so on. That's so as an e-commerce ERP, you know, people are starting to expect that a lot more from us. So that's a big gap. People who are coming from traditional ERP systems also often point out that we don't have something like payroll and FP&A built in, which are often part of large ERP suites. Now, we are intentional about it. We do not want to be payroll or an FP&A system. But with listing management, it's something that we are on the fence about. We do some part of it, but not really well.
Well, before we wrap this up, how can people learn more about you, learn more about Fulfill? What's the next step if someone's thinking about this, thinking like, hey, this, you know, this ST guy sounds pretty good. I'd love to learn more about Fulfill. I'm having some of these problems. What's the next steps? How can people learn about you and kind of move on from here?
Yeah, admittedly, I'm not much on socials. End of the day, I'm a programmer, so you won't catch me on TikTok or any of those platforms, but I am on Twitter. I don't tweet a lot, so feel free to reach out. Don't hesitate to reach out to anyone on our team. You can have a conversation about e-com trends and learn something from our team by reaching out to us on our website.
Great. And it's fulfill.io, correct?
Yes, it's fulfill.io.
Great. You mentioned you're a programmer, but you're also, of course, the co-founder and CEO. Are you still programming on a weekly basis for the product?
It's not uncommon for me to answer a support ticket. Everyone does that at Fulfill. Similarly, anyone who knows how to code writes code at Fulfill, and I do as well.
Interesting. That's super cool. That's super cool.
Keeps us all close to the product.
It does. How many people do you have on the team at Fulfill?
We are about 55 now.
55. Okay. That's neat. You're still writing code on occasion. All right. Lightning round, kind of how we traditionally cap off the episodes here. I'm sure you've heard a few of these questions. I've got a couple that we've thrown in just for you. First question, how would you describe the environment right now in e-com in 1 to 3 words?
Margins are sexy, again.
Margins are sexy. That's a good 3 words. What's one of the fondest memories from your childhood?
Pressing the turbo button on a computer. I think older listeners will definitely understand what that is.
Oh, yeah. I had forgotten about this. Didn't it like run the CPU at a higher clock rate or something like that?
Exactly. That's when you could see the clock speed on an LED display on the computer. Press the turbo button, goes faster.
So why would you ever not, I'm vaguely remembering these, why would you ever not want a turbo button? Like, what was the case for turning the turbo off? I mean, they're plugged into the wall. It's not like an electricity issue. What was the deal there?
Yeah, I believe it was like most programs at the time, games included, was written for 8086 or 8088 architectures, which ran at a lower clock speed. So they would crash if you ran at the turbo speed. So you'd still want your computer to run at a slower speed to run those applications.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. That is the perfect answer for an episode on ERP and programming. you live in Toronto, I believe.
Yeah. Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. Yes. If you didn't live in Toronto, where would you live?
Austin.
Did you say Austin or Boston?
Yeah. Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas. Okay. Nice. What's the fastest ERP integration time you've seen from like, hey, first phone call to, okay, you're up and running? And what's the longest that you've seen?
With Fulfill, we had a customer who signed, I think, about 5 weeks before their NetSuite contract was expiring. So they signed in 5 days, went live in 4 weeks. That was crazy. We shouldn't do that again. And as far as the longest one goes, this is before Fulfill. I worked for an ERP implementation with a European government. And that ERP implementation was 4 years delayed. So we were brought in to implement another temporary ERP system so they could ship computers to finish the larger ERP implementation. So it was an ERP implementation inside an ERP implementation. Both were over budget and over time.
Government at its finest right there.
Agreed.
what is the hardest part of your business?
Support. Our customers are merchants that offer like phenomenal customer experience for their customers. They expect that from us. And delivering that in every interaction is the hardest part for us to scale and do really well. And it's something that we are all obsessed over and figuring out how to do better every day.
How much money in the bank is enough? So this is either, you know, a liquid net worth, money, securities, or cash securities, something like that. But if you had this in the bank, if you made some more in the future, that'd be nice. But if you didn't, you'd be totally content and live a happy life with that in the bank in terms of cash. And it's a question we ask everybody. So the answers are always fascinating.
It's so much easier to answer for the business, though. 36 to 48 months of runway for the business. But for me, I don't know. I don't think I care much about it, but if I have to take a Silicon Valley reference, that would be a 3, isn't that the reference? Yeah, it is.
3. So is that 100, was that 100 million? Is it 3?
I'm pretty sure that's a reference to a billionaire.
A billion. Okay. Billion. So I got my commas wrong there. I guess you're right.
He calls it the 3 club.
3 club. I guess that's right. 100. Yes. 1, 2, 3. I got to write this out here. I took finance in school, although you can't tell. How many hours a week do you work on average?
60 to 70.
What's your number one hobby and you can't say work?
Hiking, camping. So these days it's mostly playing around with ChatGPT, but mostly hiking and camping.
Nice. Is there good hiking and camping like close to Toronto?
Yes, tons of spots here. We have Algonquin Park, which is the size of Delaware, and it's just a big provincial park. Lots of spots in there.
Wow. Cool. How far is that from the city?
A couple of hours.
Okay. And then finally, who's one of the most interesting people or brands, people you've met or brands you've encountered through your time in e-commerce?
There's this person that I've had the opportunity to work with a few times through e-com. His name is Edwin Chang. He was the CIO of this fashion brand called Fashion Nova, based out of LA. Seen him work with a bunch of e-com brands and help them all scale really fast and, you know, lean operations that we were talking about. I've seen him do a bunch of interesting things to get these companies lean operators. That's probably the most interesting person I've met.
Interesting. Very cool. Well, Sharun, thank you so much. I appreciate you diving into all facets of ERPs, turbo buttons, macro trends in e-commerce. This was a lot of fun and appreciate your support of the community, our events, the podcast as well. So again, if you're interested in learning more and potentially exploring an ERP or Fulfill, check them out, Fulfill, FULFIL.io, Fulfill.io. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Andrew.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell, and also to fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
the ASY Radio Network live from New York.